You think I'm joking. You think I'm joking. You think I'm joking. You think I'm joking, and I'm not. I'm not joking. This is Absolute Philosopher, Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with the Absolute Philosopher. You think I'm joking. For years now, I have been suggesting to you, be crazy. Dream your wildest dream, and dream your wildest dream, and enjoy your wildest dream, and get excited about your wildest dream, and watch miracles happen. But no. No, you got to be fundamental. You got to be standard. You got to say, that's a lie. That's not true. Would you like to know something? In this entire universe, there is no such thing as a lie. Because somewhere, whatever is being said is true. Somehow, in some circumstance, whatever is being said is true. And nothing can be said that doesn't already exist. Everything already exists. We talk about the Big Bang Theory with a scientist telling a story to his kids, you know. And another Alice in Wonderland sort of thing. And that's not a joke. It's not a joke, that's real. In every seminar I've given over the years, I've always said, dream your wildest dream. Dream your wildest dream. Go crazy. Get excited about what's going on in the world. Well, there's a dreamer who was a Jew in Germany. And he was very distressed as he was growing up there because he was a dreamer. And let me read to you what it says here from the Saturday Evening Post. That's still in the publication. It's always one of my favorite magazines. And this is a book review, Einstein, His Life and Universe, by Walter Isaacson. Another Hebrew name, beautiful fellow. And it's written sort of a synonym for genius. Einstein is a synonym for genius. America's premier biographer offers a fresh new look at a paramount icon of our age, Albert Einstein. So, the part I want to share with you is very clear here, but there we are. Einstein was a nonconformist in every possible way. His instincts as a rebel, his curiosity, his passions, his detachments, interwoven with his political side and his scientific side. All quite amazing. Now he writes here, knowing about the man, Einstein, helps us understand the wellsprings of his science and vice versa. Character and imagination and creative genius were all related as if a part of some unified field. Character, imagination, and creative genius were all related as if by some unified field. As a young boy in the militaristic Germany, watching children join in as the troops marched through the town, Einstein once began to cry, "When I grow up, I don't want to be one of those poor people," he told his parents. It was an early indication of his lifelong repugnance for dogma, authority, and following the pack, and a key element, as Isaacson shows, in Einstein's scientific discoveries. Max Planck and Philipp Lennard had come close to discovering the elements of relativity, but neither was able to make the break from established thought that Einstein made the break from when he wrote his five remarkable papers in 1905. He had the brashness needed to scrub away the layers of conventional wisdom that were obscuring the cracks in the foundation of physics. Isaacson writes, and his visual imagination allowed him to make conceptual leaps that eluded more traditional thinking that light is actually particles of quantum rather than waves, and that gravity is actually a warping of space. I go into many other aspects of our dear friend Einstein and who he is and what he does and how he acts, but the big important thing is that Einstein dreamt his wildest dream. Einstein was concerned about what was going on in his world. He was concerned about things that were happening around him, not the things that you and I are concerned about. He's not concerned about, yes, he was concerned about the politics and the activities of people and things like that and the welfare of people. But what he was really concerned about was what made the world turn. The atomic structure of the world, the theory of relativity, which was a theory that the world is the world of relativity, and that when the world steps beyond relativity, where is it? It's in a world of absolute. And in that world of absolute, what goes on in that world of absolute? Einstein didn't fear looking, because he had no idea what he was going to find. He didn't know whether he was going to find something that he wished he'd never found, because if he ever found anything he wished he'd never found, all that it said to him was, you haven't looked far enough. You haven't looked to the very foundations, to the very cracks in physics itself. And the cracks in physics itself is one concept. This is it. Eureka, we have found it. You haven't found anything. You've only found a layer of it. Can you imagine how simple this statement is and how profound this statement is? I give you a beautiful something. It looks like a cake. It's covered with chocolate frosting. It looks like a cake, but oh boy, that chocolate fruit frosting looks good. And then you, with your unbounded enthusiasm of a child, you say, I want to eat that cake, but I don't want anybody to know that I'm eating it. So you go underneath and you eat the inner part of the cake, and you leave the shell there, because it's a nice firm shell. You put it in the refrigerator to make it set a little bit. And so the chocolate shell is there, and so you just have the most fun when the family go to the table and they're all ready to cut this chocolate cake and share it with everybody, and they put the knife in there and there's nothing but air inside. And everybody says, what happened here? And of course, you know what happened, because you took it. But now, do you get a spanking for doing that? Or does your dad say, man, what creativity, what imagination this boy has, this girl has, what fantastic qualities they have. You know, wouldn't it be something? Instead of saying, you dirty little dog, taking the cake away from all the rest of us, we can't have, instead of saying, what amazing imagination you show. What amazing imagination. You see, that's the type of parents Einstein had. They, and the article goes on talking about it, they saw him do these rather unusual things. And so, what did they do? Einstein was in elementary school. In elementary school. Stupid, stupid kid. And bored to tears. And so, he said to his mother and dad, I would like to have a book on geometry. The total story of geometry. So they bought him the book. And within a few months, he learned the whole book, knew it cover to cover, and the rest of the kids in school hated him, of course. And then, next thing he wanted spherical trigonometry. It tells all the different books that they bought. Oh, yes, languages. He got every language down. It like that, except for one. And can you imagine which language that was?
French.
French was the only one that he didn't bother with, because it had no forgiveness in it. It had no imagination in it. It had no drama in it. It was just a set format of thinking, a set format of words, a set format. Everything had to fall into the formula. And you think German would be the one who would fall into formula. But Germany, a German language is a very forgiving language, actually. If you don't like a word in German, you just add another word to it, another word to it, and pretty soon you got the longest word in the world. And they have imagination. They have creativity. They're unique. But this is the culture that he was born into. This was the era he was born into. He wrote his papers, what was it, in 1906. And that was quite fantastic for him, 1905. Amazing, you know, amazing man. Now, when are you going to start writing your papers, showing your theses, showing your creativity? Now you have such a brain that it just doesn't want to stop. And you make it spend time on picking up sticks along the way in writing. Instead of in writing, say, this philosophical quantum theory of absolute, you know, and go on into your dream. You've done it. And you've done it beautifully. You had imagination. You had creativity. You had genius. But you're afraid of yourself. Get busy on that pen and pencil. After hours, you know, when you're sitting there picking your nose, instead of doing that, hit the keys on your computer and tell your stupid, crazy, idiotic, outrageous dreams, you know. And you'd be surprised. You might really have something to say. We'll never know until you write it down. Sylvia, she gets into the emotional area. She just loves to write about emotional things, and she lets her imagination just flow. She reads emotional stuff, she writes emotional stuff, and she draws a pretty attractive emotional audience. And they believe her because she writes creatively. And that's great. Now, Heinz, one of the greatest liars of the century. He's the greatest liar of the century. He is. And he keeps writing about his lie and telling about his lie. He says, I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. He says he has an ideal spirit, mind, and body, and yet he gives in to a cough. You know? He gives into a stub toe. He gives into letting the body tell him what to do, even that it's hungry. You know, stupid. If Heinz were really master of himself, like he can be, he would get so excited with his ideas that he wouldn't even think of eating. He wouldn't even think of going to the toilet. He wouldn't even think of going out and walking in the path and doing anything. He would just be soaring in the magic of his heart and soul, you know? Now, when he does that, this new era, this new area of Heinz's magic will just shine out like a beacon of light. And Ellen, my gosh, Ellen is so concerned about her little children here. Oh, come now. But Ellen, you're not doing anything creative. Ellen, if you really were and are a dynamic, creative person dreaming your wildest dream, you know what you'd do? You'd go into your office and you'd tell your secretary, please do this, do this, do this, and then you'd go in your bed and have some bonbons and read a book, you know, or whatever you want to do. And you know who your secretary is? Who?
Little Love.
And Little Love can work the computer perfectly and wonderfully, if you would just do it, but no. You see, have you read The Animal Kingdom? Animal World? Where animals rule the world? You haven't read that book? It's a fascinating book. It's a movie. And it's about animals ruling the world. And people being their lackeys, you know. And the animals are acting like humans, and the humans are acting like animals, you know. And it's silly, and neither one is doing a bad job, except that the animals are enjoying it more, because they're not possessed by things that humans are possessed by. You see? You see, you think you're so smart in thinking, I am a global universal being. I am an absolute being. I'm allness. I'm the isness. What a joke. What is it that we teach here at the University of Philosophy? What do we teach at the University of Healing? We teach I am number 12?
Not
50th? Allness? One. And we teach there is only
one.
And there is not another soul in this world, on this universe, than me. Now, I'm going for a walk. Am I going for a walk in a beautiful glade, in a beautiful wood, in a beautiful place, and along the beach? Am I enjoying the lapping of the waves on the shore? Or am I enjoying all the children playing on the beach and screaming and hollering and having a good time? Am I enjoying other riders on horseback riding along with me? Am I doing... You're number one. You're number one. There is nobody else, you see. And we constantly care about the ecology of the world. We care about saving the whales. How absolutely unimportant. If we are not living in a mind and a body where we are the master and where we say all is in divine order and mean it, not only just poof it out, but mean it, and then we say all is in divine order, and then we look at the ocean being misused, perhaps by sewage being dumped into it, and we say all is in divine order. All is in divine order. Now, what is sewage? Sewage, we say, is bad stuff. Now, what do they do in sewer plants? They clean up the bad stuff, and they purify the water, making it available for sprinkler systems and stuff like that. But you can't very well do that. You'd need two water piping systems in the city, one for drinking water and one for sewer water. Well, now, who's going to come up with the creativity for that? Heinz did. What did Heinz say? He said, oh, the weather outside is frightful. Fire is so delightful. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Let it rain, let it rain, let it rain. You see, not snow, but rain. And so the rain comes down, and Heinz is sitting in front of his fireplace, enjoying himself, you know, smoking his pipe and eating his bonbons and just thinking beautiful thoughts. Now, Heinz, what's watering your trees and your plants?
My thought.
Your thoughts. The natural, creative way that it should be done. Now, Heinz, can you bring a cloud full of rain and drop just the amount of rain you want at any time you want it to be dropped? Yes. But do you do it? No. You don't do it because you think, it's not raining out. Oh, it's a clear sky. There's no clouds. Hey, you don't need clouds. What do you do, Heinz?
I see it already green.
That's even better. Heinz sees it already green. So he's gone step beyond the clouds. He's gone step beyond needing rain. Now, why not? Why not? Heinz, did you know you're an idiot? Seeing something already green that needs water and it needs fertilizer and it needs love and it needs it, and you see it already green, you're bypassing all sorts of these human steps. Don't you know that? No, you don't know that. You're just being yourself and having fun. I say to Heinz, Heinz, I think that we need some more dogs around here. And Heinz says, well, let's see, what kind of dog would I like? He doesn't ask me what I like. He doesn't ask any of us what we like. He says, what kind of dog does he like? So he gets the kind of dog he likes. Who does he think he is, number one? Maybe he is, you know? Maybe he is. What have I always told you about giving gifts? Give a gift that you'd like to receive. And then you'll never go wrong. Because if they don't like it, they'll give it to you. Remember?
Pajama.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. But just only give what you think you should give, you know. Yeah. And when you do that, wonderful things happen. But Benjamin Franklin had a better word for it. Be neither a buyer, a borrower, or lender. Be neither a lender nor a borrower. Neither borrow nor lend, because whatever you give, give without any strings attached. And you say, well, how do the finance companies work on that? We're not concerned about the finance companies, are we? Do you know, Heinz? You know what happened when the refrigerator come in? When the refrigerators come in, what happened? The icemen went out of business, pretty much. Remember? Nobody bought ice like they bought ice before. But they're still using ice. We still have large ice-producing factories. And you know what they're doing now? They're selling ice by the cube. You buy a bag of 50 cubes or 100 cubes, and then you use it for your cocktails or whatever you want to use it for. And my goodness, we used to make it in our refrigerator ourselves. But now people find it more convenient to go out for a party and buy a couple of bags of cubes, and they're all fresh and nice. But they tell you on the airplane, do not drink the water from the airplane tank, because it could be anything. And they say, do not use the ice cubes on an airplane, because the ice cubes are made by the water that is taken from whatever source they have available. You understand? Mm-hmm. It's not bottled water frozen. So if you take ice cubes in your drink on the airplane thing, oh, you're doing such a good thing. You're just drinking the normal water. Do you have a... Heinz, and I love picking on you. Do you have the opportunity to create perfect water for yourself?
Yes.
All the time. Now, Heinz, when you go on the airplane, do you order ice cubes? No. But the thing is, Heinz, do you have the opportunity to order water that has not been tested? Yes, you do. And ice cubes are part of it. Now, do you do that? Now, when you're on the airplane, do you take the water from the sink in the bathroom and turn it on and brush your teeth with it and then clean your toothbrush with it? Same thing. When I'm in Nigeria, the water in Nigeria is not something that my body is conditioned for. It can get conditioned for it quickly if I want, but it's not conditioned for it. So I don't rinse my toothbrush off with the water from the sink. I use water at the bottled water, right?
Yeah.
Okay, now, I have the choice. I have the choice of whatever I want to put in my body or whatever I want to do. Now, I can be immune to those things. The Nigerians are immune to those things. They drink the water out of the sink, but they still prefer the bottled water too, because it's kind of nice, classy. Okay, now, are you number one, Ingeborg?
Yes, I am.
Are you going to write me some stories that are going to knock off my socks?
Yes.
Good for you. Now, you see, Einstein did it, and Einstein was not appreciated. In the article here, it says that Einstein was speaking to someone at the banquet where he was being honored, and as he was, well, I won't try to look for it. As he was sitting there, somebody said to him, he said to somebody, "Look at all of the show they're putting on for me, you know. Would they put on this big a show, you know, if I were dead?" And what's that sad about? You know, silly, you know. But you see, this is what he was sort of a skeptic, sort of a mystic. He was many wonderful things, but what was he mostly, Heinz?
Genius.
He was himself. He was himself a genius, a pure, wonderful, unadulterated genius who lived for
himself,
who thought for
himself,
who surrounded himself by things that were important to himself. That's all. Now, you can too. And that's why I say, dream your wildest dream. And if you dream that in front of the house right now. We have a beautiful forest of pine trees that are growing just lovely as can be, and big and tall. They're each 100 foot tall pine trees, lovely things, you know. And could you walk out there and see them?
Mm-hmm.
What would it take to walk out there and see them?
Imagination.
Instant.
It would take your realization that you are the creator of your world, and whatever you think about is true. Now, Sylvia walks out there and she says, I don't see any pine trees. Ingeborg walks out and says, my God, look at all the pine trees out there. And Ellen walks out there and says, oh, come on, now we got to rake up all these needles. And Heinz walks out there and he says, look at the reindeer running through the forest. Look at this and that. Everybody's seen something different. Everybody's seen different. And yet it's true. It's true. It's true. Now, did you see young Tarzan? It's a cartoon we have here. And young Tarzan, what does he do? He tried to cozy up with different type of animals, you know, have them be their surrogate parents, you know. And they didn't care for him. It's just like Brother Bear. You've seen Brother Bear, haven't you? And in Brother Bear, the older bear pushes the younger bear away. No cozying up stuff, you know. And you see, did the younger bear care? He just did his thing. He just did his thing. Okay, we'll keep trying it, you know. And we'll get through to this guy yet, that the younger bear would say that I am
number one.
Number one. Did the younger bear think he was number one?
Yes.
Did it disturb him in the slightest that the big bear was unhappy?
No.
Yes, it did. It disturbed him that he created the big bear unhappy.
Oh, yeah.
And so he wanted the big bear to be happy and to have his girlfriend or whatever, you know. And, I mean, it's a pure human joke. But the way they created it and the way they developed it was just beautiful imagination. Do you think it's going to build values and morals in children? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, what would be the greatest value and the greatest moral that Brother Bear could build in a child?
Be number one.
Be himself.
To not be touched by what others do. See, when you're number one, you're not touched by what others do. That way, the little bear, what was his name? Kala or something. The little bear would not have been disturbed when Brother Bear did what he did, you know. You know, he wouldn't have been disturbed. He would have just gone his way. Now, I think the two mooses were the most perfect example of unconditional love and of being untouchable. Well, they were crazy. Isn't that wonderful? Wasn't that wonderful? Now hide down. No, we're not bears. We're not moose. We're chipmunks. And you see, they're willing to play the game. Did you notice how quickly they were willing to play the game?
Yeah.
See? So this is a lesson to us. Be quick to play the game. What happened to the moose, in the end? In the end, they got the girls. Both of them. Each. And each one came to the rescue of Little Bear, remember?
Mm-hmm.
Each one in a silly way, but there were silly things. And the girls, the Mises' girlfriends, were on top of the hill looking, oh, goody, 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 our wonderful, brave men, you know. But you see, all of this, the subplots that go on in life, if you could put them all together, and if you could have everyone acting like the mooses, you know, it'd be fantastic. Because they were gentle, they were loving, they were doing their own thing, they were having their own erotic smell senses going on in the stinky leaves and stuff like that, but they were just being themselves. And then they came up and said, can you go along with us? You can chase away the hunters so the hunters won't come for us. You'll eat them up. And you see, they play a game. And they're always playing a game. And we, in watching the show, immediately equated with it and flowed with it. Dream your wildest dream. Be crazy. Be outrageous. Be wonderful. It's up to you to do that. And nobody else cares whether you do it or not. But it's up to you. Now, are you willing to pay the price of being outrageous? What's that, Herb? Are you willing to have San Francisco south of San Diego? Mentally? Can you play that game?
Sure.
Can you visualize that? And no, you can't. You can't visualize it because you have not taught yourself to play the game. You've not taught yourself to visualize. Do you think that Einstein could have ever come up with the concepts that he did, which have proven themselves true, if he had gone the same old traditional way that the other scientists did? As Max Planck said of him, that Einstein was one of the greatest scientists that the world has ever known. Do you know? at the dinner, Einstein was talking to the people next to him, and he said, "Do you know what Calvin?" Because it was a Presbyterian university, you know. And he said, "Do you know what Calvin would have done had he been here?" He asked, and he would have erected an enormous stake and had all of us burned for our sinful extravagance, wasting money. The man never addressed Einstein again. Einstein's fame rose as he did these things, but along with it came problems. And because of the problems, here, this was interesting too. He never lost his self-depreciating wit. When his Japanese publisher paid him handsomely to make a visit to Japan in 1922, thousands waited all night outside the hotel to applaud him when he stepped out on the balcony.
Wow.
And he said, "No living person deserves this sort of reception." He remarked to his cousin, the second wife, Elsa, that as the crowds cheered, "I'm afraid we're swindlers. We'll end up in prison yet for taking things that we shouldn't have." You know, it's amazing. You read something like this here about a man that we've all misunderstood and we all will misunderstand because he's crazy. Because he's dreaming his wildest dream. Because he's going where no man has dared to go, into the field of imagination. And I tell you today, go into your field of imagination. It's just a matter of turning your consciousness to the thoughts within you. And as you go to your field of imagination, wow, everything is possible for you. Because everything already is. And it already is done right now. So, my loves, have a lovely day, and remember, I love you. I love you.
I love you.
Thank you.